From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a night of paranormal happenings with Lloyd Auerbach as we start to bring in your Labor Day weekend a little bit ahead of schedule for you. Well, they say global warming will make severe thunderstorms and tornadoes a more common feature here in the United States, according to NASA scientists. Climate models have previously shown that Earth will see more heavy rainstorms as the atmosphere warms. But a new climate model developed by NASA researchers is the very first to show the difference in strength between storms that occur over land and those over the ocean. And now, how these storm strengths will change in general, and they will be huge, they predict. Mysterious waves that help transport the sun's energy out into space have been detected by scientists for the very first time. Researchers hope their discovery of the energetic ripples known as Alfvén waves will shed light on other solar phenomena, such as the sun's magnetic fields and its super hot corona, or the outermost atmosphere. In a moment, physicist James McCanney joins us as he reacts to this story, and hopefully he will be able to shed some light on it for us. The United Nations Nuclear Agency says that Iran was producing less nuclear fuel than expected, and they praised Iran for a significant step forward in explaining past atomic actions that have raised suspicions. The report is expected to make it more difficult for the United States to rally support for a new round of sanctions against Iran. A Chinese man has videotaped a large white animal swimming in a river. No, it is not Nessie. Experts say it's a dolphin, a part of a species that's unique to China, feared extinct. Mrs. Tennessee was bitten by a rattlesnake on her way to rehearsals for the Mrs. America pageant and was treated on the scene by one of her competitors for the crown, a registered nurse, Mrs. Idaho. Christina Ryan, a 28-year-old, was leaving a breakfast at a hotel in Tucson when the snake coiled at the bottom of some concrete steps, struck, biting her on the foot. Luckily, Mrs. Idaho, a registered nurse, Laura Lynn Solanas, she's 37, was with her and was able to extract the snake's fang from her skin. She'll be okay. A Romanian builder who injured his back traveled hundreds of miles home in a coffin while he was still alive. Well, he'd been working in a village in Macedonia when the accident happened. After a few days in the hospital, doctors told him that he could go home, but that he could only be transported lying flat on his back. And under local laws there, ambulances can only be used to transport people whose life is in serious danger, so that was ruled out. He decided then to call some taxi drivers to take him home. They refused, saying that they were not insured for such jobs. So his boss borrowed a hearse from a friend who runs an undertaker's company and put him in a coffin and drove him back to Romania. How fitting, huh? A new high-tech toothbrush has been launched with built-in sat-nav. The maker is Oral-B. They claim that you can clean your teeth while it transmits information by radio to a separate miniature display screen telling you where you should clean. It also tells you how long you should brush for and if you're brushing too hard or not hard enough. Amazing with technology. In a moment, James McCanney joins us. We'll talk about these sun ripples and what it means to us. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Professor James McCanney, he's taught mathematics courses at a university level, also physics. He's a regular contributor here at Coast to Coast. We're going to talk with Jim this entire hour about these incredible solar events. We'll also take your calls a little bit later on at the half. Professor and physicist James McCanney. Hey, Jim, how are you?
George, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. It's good to get you back. And thanks for coming on at such short notice with this really strange story, Jim, that hopefully you can explain it to us and shed some, as I said before, some light on this thing. What do they mean by these mysterious waves, these ripples?
Well, they have imaged the magnetic, they look like waves, and there's actually a great video, which is a black and white video on a link to it from space.com where this article was published August 30th. This just came out today. So if you go to space.com, there's a link to one of the videos. But basically, if you take the sun as a ball and then look at the edge, it looks like the magnetic field lines and then basically flows going along those magnetic field lines. And some of them wrap back into the sun like a solar flare. Sometimes you see them arcing out and coming back into the sun, and then some of them simply leave. And this is something I have been around for a long time, is this model of the sun. And here's, I want to give an example. Imagine you have a campfire, and here's the quagmire that physicists are met with. The solar corona, which surrounds the sun, is about 2,000 times hotter than the solar surface. So the question is, how does this amazing, tremendously hot cloud of electrons stay around the sun? And by all physical principles, it should go flying away. These are relativistic electrons, and there's no known mechanism to keep them in place and no known mechanism to provide the energy that we see there. So at any rate, I have my own views on this, but here is an example. Imagine you have a campfire.
Okay.
And it's burning, and you got a wood source down there, your wood fire. But above the fire is a cloud of energy or burning that's equivalent to the hottest acetylene torch. Now, the heat from your fire is going up through this and going away, but the energy that's stored in this cloud that's right above your fire just sits there and doesn't go away. And you're trying to imagine how this fire of wood that you have, your average campfire, is providing the energy of this acetylene torch hot cloud that's just sitting there. That's the quagmire.
Now, Jim, are these waves, these ripples, are they much like a tsunami of waves in an ocean? Once they start, they just keep rumbling, and how serious could they be?
Well, it's the normal activity of the sun, and scientists pretty much knew that these were there. They just have never really been able to image them, so to speak. And previously, they've seen like ocean waves going across the surface of the sun, but these are leaving the sun. These are actually following the magnetic field lines out from the sun. And for the first time, using special equipment, scientists have been able to take a composite picture and almost like a video of this happening. But the expectation of a lot of scientists is this may help them explain where the energy comes from for the solar corona, but you're still left with the quagmire. How does that corona stay there? And there again, unless you invoke electrical theoretical work, you're not going to find a reason for those relativistic electrons to sit there.
Do you think the sun has its own weather and weather patterns, much like our planet and other planets throughout the solar system, throughout the universe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it's created by the sun, which is a little different than the weather on Earth. If we didn't have that sun up there, that external source of heat, energy, and electricity, we wouldn't have any weather on Earth at all, whereas the sun is creating its own source of energy and creating its own weather system. Back in the mid-90s, the Russians were able to actually photograph tornadoes, big cyclonic storms. They looked like twisters rolling across the solar surface. And they've been viewed many times since then. But so you have tornadoes, you have the equivalent of hurricanes in a sunspot, in the magnetic vortice that surrounds a sunspot. The wind patterns look just like a hurricane.
Are you saying there are actually wind patterns on the sun?
Right, down at the surface. And are the very strange thing about the sun is if you go back, let's go back 30 years with solar theory, And they the thought that the fusion engine is down at the core, something that scientists still hold on to. And we did this in college and in grad school. You do a problem, it's a mathematical statistical problem called the random walk. And if you have X-ray energy down in the very core where this fusion engine is supposed to be, and this energy has to get up through all of that atmosphere up to the edge of the sun and then be released up at the edge. But these X-rays are formed and they go subatomic distance. They are absorbed and then they are transmitted again. And this goes on. And it takes about a million years for an X-ray energy to actually come up to the surface of the sun. And when you do that problem, the end result is that the sun's surface should be a very uniform, very smooth, non-eruptive surface of about 6,000 degrees. And that's what scientists used to think that we'd find on the sun. And all of a sudden, they're observing all of this tremendous activity, waves and magnetic explosions. And they didn't know 30 years ago about they knew about solar flaring and things like that. A little bit, but they had no idea the activity that they're observing today. But yet they hold on to this core fusion idea. And of course, what I've always said is that the fusion is at the surface of the sun. There's various ways to actually prove that. So the other thing about the corona, the only way to explain the corona, the relativistic electrons circling the sun, is to invoke electrical, it's like a superatom. The electrons are literally orbiting a positively charged core, and that's the structure of the sun. But to imagine that somehow this actually quite cool solar surface is driving this tremendous amount of energy that we see in the corona, it just doesn't make sense. Like I say, it's like having a campfire with this acetylene torch hot cloud over it and imagining that somehow that campfire is providing the energy in that cloud, and there's no mechanism for that cloud to just sit there. In normal physics, something that hot's just going to dissipate very rapidly.
Jim, so, do you think this entire universe is changing? The universe is changing, not the solar system, not just the sun, but the entire universe.
Well, it's a very dynamic place. And of course, when you look out at the universe on our time scale, things don't change very rapidly. But definitely things are happening at a very fast pace out there. So of course, when we look out, things seem to sit there and sit there and sit there. But on the overall scale of the universe, things are changing. Galaxies are forming. I'm not a big proponent of the Big Bang concept myself. I think we live in what they used to call a steady state, but it is anything but a steady state. Things are changing. But on our time scale of humans, they tend to seem to stay pretty much the same.
Well, bring it all home for us, Jim. What does this all mean to us with the sun acting the way it is and with things just changing so rapidly now? What's
well,
it mean to
the,
us?
The sun is, I think that's what scientists are finally coming to the conclusion that even 10 years ago, they talked about the sun being stable over billions of years. And now we're finding that it's unstable over even a 10-day period. So, and that contributes to our weather and well-being on planet Earth. So the end result is we can't really predict what the sun's going to do next week or next month or 10 years or 100 years from now. There are many factors that we don't really understand, and I think it's like predicting the weather or climate. We simply don't have enough information to really understand where we've been and where it's going.
Jim, you know how people have been acting a little strange lately?
Right.
And, I don't know if it had anything to do with the lunar eclipse, but you've got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, this August 28th, we had a total lunar eclipse, which means the Earth moves in front of the moon relative to the sun blocks the sun light out, and then the moon darkens. You get that characteristic crescent shape, and then all of a sudden the moon comes back in the matter of about an hour. But in August, we are in this electrical current sheet that passes back to the sun. That's why we have the aurora peak in August and the hurricane peak in August. So we have all this additional electrical energy. And actually, the reason why people act strange during a full moon is because the solar wind is pounding right on our doorstep, so to speak, about 30,000 miles up. And it's like a freight train going by, and it sets up vibrations in the electric composition of our ionosphere, and that translates down to us people as humans. When we have a new moon, the moon is out in front of us to the sunward side, and it actually blocks the solar wind and all of those solar electrical conditions. And so the new moon actually is blocking all of that. So it actually prevents all of this high energy activity. But in August, the other thing we had this August was Venus was coming around. We had the inferior conjunction of Venus on August 18th. So what happened, and you could actually see this in the satellite data, as Venus moved away and about the same time as the lunar eclipse, mm-hmm. the full moon, we were in the turbulent wash of Venus's plasma tail. So all of these rapidly changing conditions electrically around Earth made this one of the most bizarre and probably human affecting full moons of a long time, in a long time.
Well, I got to tell you, Jim, you know, the world continues to change, and you've been right there watching it, viewing it, and everything else. And when you said that you don't believe in the Big Bang Theory, what do you think? You think everything was always here?
Well, it's like, this is the thing, this is my example. Say you walk into the middle, or you're dropped into the middle of a forest, and you look around and you see big trees, and you see trees falling down, and you see little seedlings, and you see mushrooms feeding on fallen, decayed trees, and you see all of the conditions of the forest, and you're left with, somebody asks you, where did this forest come from? And you're left with the real dilemma of trying to figure out where it comes from, where this whole thing came from. And relative to your time frame in this forest, really, you're in a steady state system. And to imagine that there was no forest there ever before, the point is you really don't have enough information. And the whole issue with the Big Bang comes back to the interpretation of the redshift. And this is where I believe modern science has really taken a left turn and never come back, in that the redshift is not an indication of distance. There's another source of redshift. It's provable in a laboratory. It's called the induced electric dipole redshift. And the redshifts that astronomers are measuring in stars and galaxies is an internal property of those fusion objects. It has nothing to do with how far away they are. So our map of the universe is totally distorted, because the yardstick that astronomers are using, that yardstick is totally erroneous.
The yardstick is erroneous. If that's the case, then everything could be screwed up.
Oh, absolutely. And recently, astronomers announced that they found this big void in space. And what that amounts to is there's a big gap in the redshift. Well, there could be voids where they think there are a lot of objects, and there could be a lot of objects where they think there are voids, just because of misinterpreting the redshift.
Well, Jim, I'm going to open up the phone lines in a moment for you, and I'd like all kinds of science questions to come in and filter your way. What have you been up to lately?
Well, I actually tried to take a little time off this summer and just get my wits about me again. But summer is pretty much over, so I'll be back at the at full speed here. But
it is going by fast. Hey, Jim, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be right back with you. We'll take phone calls with our special guest this hour, physicist James McCanney. We're going on some ghost investigations next hour. That's right. We're going to take your phone calls with physicist James McCanney for the rest of this half hour. Then, of course, Lloyd Auerbach joins us. And we're going to talk about some paranormal things. We're getting an early start on the Labor Day weekend for you. And just a program note, don't forget, Ian Punnett, of course, hosting Coast to Coast on Saturday. I'll be here for you Sunday. And I'll also have a live program for you Labor Day night, as though there'll be no tape there. On our Friday program, lots going on for you as you kick into your weekend. The special 2 hours with Linda Moulton Howe talking about the incredible Barney and Betty Hill abduction case. I mean, an absolutely riveting report from Linda coming up tomorrow, then an hour or so of open lines, and then a special tribute at the end of tomorrow night's program for Aaron Russo, who passed away at the age of 64. Aaron Russo, of course, another one of those fine guests of Coast to Coast. We've had a lot of them have passed on over the last couple of years. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls with Jim McCanney on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with physicist James McCanney. Jim, have you noticed that Velikovsky's old theories of captured comets and the like are starting to generate a little bit more support? Maybe not in total, but at least more and more scientists are beginning to say, you know what, this could be possible.
Well, I find there's two kind of levels of science. I guess I call them levels, and I just saw today again where they're still trying to talk about the solar system forming all at one time and, a new idea that, filled in one of the blanks. But the reality is we have all kinds of objects in the solar system that weren't here at some point in time. We don't really know when. But scientists are just a little shy of imagining that Venus wasn't there in a short time ago, within the last 10,000 years. And all of the theoretical work to show how it came in as a large comet, was interacted with the planets, including Earth, and then nestled into its current location, all of that theoretical work is done and very sound. I think we just are dealing with scientists who are in kind of the cave ages, and then there are scientists. Here's the telltale sign. When I go to the international scientific meetings, the real scientists who are doing real science are fully aware of the electrical nature of the solar system. And they're still fighting that political kind of black eye that Velikovsky had. Mm-hmm. And that scientists would get if they somehow cross that line and say that comets are not dirty snowballs. I think that's the crux of the issue. And but the bottom line is, with all the pictures of comets we have now, there's no ice there. There's no snow. They're hot, dry rocks. And soon, I think the wall is going to break down, and I'm not sure what's going to cause that, but I certainly keep pounding on it.
All right, Jim, one more quick question before we go to calls. Can we, and what could happen if we got hit by a comet tail?
Well, the little ones, we went through the tail of Comet Halley in 1910, and astronomers many times point to that to say that nothing would happen. But that's a little puffball of a comet. If we went through the tail of a real comet, and let's take a real comet, which is not a big comet, but Hale-Bopp, which we could have done if we were a little bit different in our orbit.
All right.
But we would have been blocked from the sun for a period of about 20 days. Our temperature would have dropped. We would have had a fairly good influx of water. And instead of global warming now, we'd have global cooling. We'd be in basically back in an ice age.
All right, let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with the professor on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, my name is Mark. I'm listening from WGAB in Evansville, Indiana.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for calling.
It's good to talk to you, George, and your guest. This gives me a particular honor to ask a question that's been bothering me for years. I study physics a little bit, and when people talk about the speed of light and the amount of time it takes for photon energy to arrive so that we can see an image, even where the sun is during the daytime, we're not really seeing where it is. There's a time lag. The further away we look at something, the further back in time it is. When we see a galaxy, we might be looking at billions of years ago where that image started from. How do we possibly know where that image or where that galaxy is now? How is it they are able to project because of the distances and the time loss what the universe really looks like?
That's a great question, Mark, and that very question brings up some very difficult physics questions, say relative to gravity in the solar system, because for that same reason, when planets move and interact, it would seem that gravity also would take a certain amount of time to interact and move, so that the force of gravity is working on where a planet used to be, not where it is now. So that creates a problem, but you're absolutely right. And here's another little problem related to that. When astronomers take their picture of the universe and they start looking back and they say, we're looking back in time and now scientists have seen objects they believe that are only 500 million years after the Big Bang. But the only problem is they're in all directions when we look out in all directions. So if you actually were seeing objects that were only 500 million years after the Big Bang, they would have to be consolidating in some location in the sky near where the original Big Bang had to be. But that's not the case. They're all over the sky. That's a real good question, and I wish a lot of astrophysicists would ask themselves the same question, because in answering it, they're going to find out that, in fact, what you're saying, our picture of the universe is what we see now, not what what was there a long time ago, not what is there now. So that's a real good question.
All right, there you go, Mark. Let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, I'm calling from Vancouver, B.C. I got a question, quick question for your guest, something that's always bothered me about the Big Bang Theory as well. If, in fact, there was a Big Bang and it was a giant explosion, how is it that all the, which has never been explained to me properly, how is it all the planets and stars and whatnot are in a round shape? Would you not, if you would have a normal explosion, you would have jags of pieces all over the place, and I've never really been explained to me how planets, they're all round that kind of always bothered me about the Big Bang Theory.
Well, they say everything was in a gas form first, and then as they spun, they turned into that round format. But go ahead, Jim, I'll let you explain it better than I can.
Well, one of the things about round planets is... Hello?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things about round planets is that they're big and they had to be molten to the point that the self-gravity pulled them together. And so in outer space, if you took a giant liquid, then the gravity would pull that together. And then once they solidified in a round shape. We have all kinds of examples as we go down to smaller and smaller moons where they're not round, or they're kind of round but not really round. And then you get down to the much smaller objects, and most of those are anything but round. But the answer is that the bigger planets were molten, and the self-gravity pulled that molten glob into a spherical shape.
All right, next up, east of the Rockies. Hi.
Hi, my name is Alex, first-time caller. I'm calling from New York City.
Hello, Alex. Go ahead.
I just have a quick question for your guest. Is he an atheist? And the next question I wanted him to answer was, how does he explain black holes and the theory of black holes, and isn't that really, you know, things that are unexplainable? Isn't the people that tend to lean towards more religion and God and the existence of God, as far as things that we can't explain? And that's it. I just wanted him to answer those questions.
All right. We'll let him answer those. Jim, the question about whether you're an atheist or not, that's entirely up to you if you want to answer that one.
Well, actually, I'll answer that. I'm not an atheist. I believe that they're in various things. Let's put it this way. I'm a Christian, so I believe in treating people fairly as a basic human type of thing. But in a more cosmic sense, I believe that we're just starting to observe and understand what was there. So I believe in a higher entity, let's put it that way. Certainly we are not, we're just discovering what was there. So that would imply a much more knowledgeable entity in this universe. And we tend to call that God. But I think the mysteries here cloud us from really understanding who or what that being really is all about.
All right. And also he wants to know about black holes.
And
specifically,
black holes, those are part of the Big Bang scenario. And I think a lot of what they see can be explained also using electrical models. I just saw something where they're seeing some bending of light around neutron stars. Once again, that bending of light can be explained with electrical models. So what we're really seeing out there, I don't know if they're black holes. Certainly there are very dense, massive objects out there. But the concept of black holes implying a space-time warping where things can't leave and are sucked in to this a null point in space, I'm not sure if I totally believe that.
Okay, back to the calls. Wildcard line. Thanks for holding. Hi.
Yes, hi, Doctor. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut calling, and I'm an amateur astronomer, and I want to ask you a question that involves the latest cutting-edge thinking in astrophysics, which involves string theory, the fact that there may be 11 dimensions besides the three dimensions of space and one dimension of time in our universe, as well as the multiverse, the many universes theory, that sort of both of these together combines the Big Bang as well as the steady state theory, because the latest thinking in the astrophysics I want you to comment on is brains, meaning B-R-A-N-E-S, which means membranes, and the fact that maybe our universe is one single brain, and maybe a trillion years ago it banged against another brain, which caused the Big Bang that started our universe, and our universe may be one Big Bang out of an infinite series of Big Bangs. Could you comment on this?
Well, I think it's kind of like in Mesopotamia a long time ago. They saw two mountain ridges and they thought that the firmament rested on those. And I think we're kind of in that state here where we have a certain amount of information and we can see a certain distance out into the universe, but every time we build a bigger telescope, we see more. So once again, I don't think we have enough information to make these somewhat ultimate decisions and observations and determinations with the data that we have. And then given the idea that there was another source of redshift, it gets to be rather complicated. So I don't think we have the final solution. And all of the concepts of, you know, string theory, many-dimensional space, et cetera, that's what it is. It's theoretical work. And still, I think we're struggling with even more fundamental concepts of, like, what is gravity? Take that one. Let's come right back to planet Earth. We still don't have a good theory for what gravity is all about.
Isn't it incredible? An Israeli physicist believes that we can go back into time. And, of course, it's going to take a long time. But that's kind of fascinating, Jim.
Well, and there again, theoretical work, and then I'm an experimentalist as well as a theoretician, and the one
critical thing that I always need when I do theoretical work is an experiment or series of experiments that prove your theory. And so if people have ideas, that's great, but you got to get off the paper and get into the laboratory or whatever to make it work. And that's the proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Okay, back to the calls. Wildcard line. Thank you for holding. You're on the air with us.
Hey, George. This is Michael from Ohio. Listen to you, Michael. On WTVN.
The Monsters. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I got a question, and I love how the other questions have kind of led up to mine, which is kind of nice. Since the ancient days up to the present days, people have pretty much seen the same stars out there. I mean, you know, Orion's Belt and so on and so forth. To the layman, when they think of space and they listen to Albert Einstein with his, you know, flat time theory, most people see space in a linear way, line of sight. And so when you're like in America and you look out into the night sky, you're seeing, you know, in that direction. If the Big Bang theory actually happened, wouldn't it have gone in a circular motion? Which means, theoretically to me, that at some point the stars should change. I mean, if you're going around in a circle, you know, as our galaxy does, that the stars that we would see over time would change.
Well, actually, I've seen diagrams, for example, of say the Milky Way, what it was like 10,000 or 100,000 years ago, and those stars, you know, we think of a constellation, and we kind of think that they're all together, maybe in a group or something, but some of those stars could be very much farther or closer than the other ones, and then they're moving in relatively different directions. So, in fact, the shape of the constellations and the patterns of the stars, if you went back 10,000 or 100,000 or a million years, the sky would look quite a bit different, actually, or if you went in the future. The same thing, but this is all our local group of stars in our own galaxy, which is just a smidgen of our corner of the universe. So we really don't see much for stars other than entire galaxies off in the distance. But all of the stars and the things that we see as we look up in the night sky are really local, very local in our little corner of the Milky Way galaxy.
Let's squeeze in one more call. West of the Rockies, got to go really fast. Hi.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, please.
West of the Rockies?
Yep, and we only have about 40 seconds for you,
40
sir.
40 seconds. It has to do with the redshift, and the whole Big Bang is based on the redshift, and he gave an explanation of why the redshift was probably not caused by galaxies rushing away from us. I think that the redshift is probably caused by the energy of the photons being degraded over time just by the simple oscillation of the electromagnetic field, and that as the energy decreases over time, it has an effect of a redshift. And it has nothing to do with distance, but it doesn't have to do with racing away from us, but at the photons losing energy due to oscillation. Any comments?
Emil Wolf is a prominent physicist and theoretician, and he's got a theory that's very much like that. But the problem is when you do that, you actually get blue and red shifts in the theoretical work, and all we see in outer space are red shifts. So just a quick commentary on that. These are complex topics, you know, and for every idea there's, you know, it's, you know, there are counter ideas. And
but I got to tell you, Jim, what well-read people, huh? Incredible
very
phone calls.
Question.
Hey, Jim, we are out of time. You have a great Labor Day weekend with your family, my friend, all right?
Okay, George, and thanks very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. I'll be back in a moment. A little paranormal investigation upcoming. Lloyd Auerbach, our guest. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.